Check, check.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to the Questionable Behavior Podcast. Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @_QBPC. Also, give us 5 stars on all your favorite podcast platforms. Subscribe to YouTube, Google, everything. You know, we're on the internet. We got a special guest with us today. We have hand pan specialist, artist, producer, Dan McQueen. What's up,
hey,
Dan?
What's up, man? Happy to be here.
Yeah, what's going
Appreciate
on?
The invite.
Of course. Yeah. you guys may have seen Dan on our Instagram before, but now you see him live in person for a full interview. So, Dan, first things first, you are a master handpan player. All right? If people don't know, handpan is kind of...
Master's a little pretentious, but I think I do all right.
I would say master because he's playing like 7 at the same time. So, first of all, the instrument itself is not a very known instrument. And it's like a variation, I would say, of like the Caribbean steel.
Yeah. Yeah, the one with the mallets.
Yep, exactly.
Steel pan, yeah.
So how does someone get into this instrument that's not even been around for that long? And not only that, you're basically have a full career out of a brand new instrument that nobody knows about, really.
Yeah, so I actually found it in... The instrument itself is only from the year 2000, and 2000, 2001, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually found it in, like, 2007, 2008 on YouTube.
Yeah.
Of all places. You know, you go down, like, the wormholes of, like, strange instruments and, you know, like, weird things that you could just watch, like, randomly.
Yeah,
and then
one after the next.
One after the next after the next. And then when I saw the first video of somebody playing a handpan, I was, like, you know, completely mesmerized, like, kind of tunnel vision. And, like, I needed to know everything about the instrument. I wanted to play it, you know, yesterday. Like, I was so just enamored with it. Like, the possibilities of it, the sound, just really everything. I kind of just fell in love immediately. And, yeah, that was 2008 probably, and yeah.
So initially, you're just digging through YouTube. You're like, holy shit! And then there's not that many even players, I guess, at that time.
No, not really. There was probably maybe 4 or 5 like main like people who were actually putting out music and content and making videos and stuff. And so it wasn't a whole lot.
And you're just digging through
just
this,
digging. Yeah.
Because I mean, your background of percussion anyway.
Yeah.
So you're coming back from a percussion background. You see this freaking instrument that you're like.
Yeah.
Every type of sound is coming out of it.
Yeah, I'd been a drummer for like 8 or 9 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Over 9 years at that point. So it was like everything. It had the percussion elements, like the, you know, more percussive style playing, as well as this like beautiful melodic side that I wasn't used to as a drummer, playing, you know, rock music and hardcore music and all that stuff. So it was just really, threw a wrench into everything, you know, for in the best way, you know.
And the first actual handpan you got, you received in Italy, if I'm not mistaken.
I did, yeah. I found so it's because the instrument is so new. When I first got into it, there was only a handful of people even making them, and the most famous ones were the people who invented the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you had to like write a letter and like travel to Switzerland to get one.
Oh, that's where it was invented
that's where
in Switzerland.
Yeah, that's okay. In Switzerland. And at that time, I was, you know, high school, so I was broke, and I'd never even been on an airplane. So
how much were they going for at that time? Like from the main company?
I would say, like, probably at that point was, like, the second generation of the instrument was probably, like, $1,400, $1,600 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But the resale market for them, like, when you checked eBay and stuff back then, was, like, $8,000 to $12,000.
Oh, because once you got it.
Yeah, because it was so scarce. So... but anyway, yeah, when I found the guy on YouTube, he was one of the, this guy named Marco Della Rada. He was this Italian guy who was making them in his backyard out of, 55-gallon drum lids. Like that's the traditional way that you make the Trinidad and Tobago steel pan.
Right.
And yeah, I found him and we started talking and he offered like a homemade one. And, you know, it wasn't the best quality, but it looked the part. It had at least something that sounded like it. And, you know, at the time that was enough. That was enough for me.
So, did you go to Italy and that's how you met?
Or he was shipping at that point.
Okay.
So yeah, he shipped it to me in Central New Jersey.
And you found him through this YouTube.
Yeah, I found him through YouTube, and it was I was friends with him for probably like a year and a half before he made me an instrument, and I kept up with him afterward, and it was nice.
And he's like, yeah, I'll make you a homemade one.
Yeah, I'll make it for you. And it was just like a really nice, like, you know, we got to know each other, and then he agreed to build me one, and. It was fun, man. It was my first like introduction to like the community that's around the instrument, which was kind of nice.
So, right before that, what kind of music were you playing? What kind of instruments musically? What were you getting involved in? Bands, the high school bands, things like that.
So I was into a lot of different music. Like drum set was my first instrument. So you know, I grew up playing like classic rock and blues music, and then got really into like the indie rock, like hardcore music. Hip hop music was more in college and stuff. But I played in like a bunch of different bands with a bunch of different people, and had always been like fascinated with obviously the drums are my main thing, but really fascinated in like song structures and producing the stuff. So when I first saw the handpan, it was kind of like I could do all of this by myself. It was really inspiring,
So now tell me about the transition musically from percussion, because I used to play the drum set back in college and in high school and whatever, but reading notes and just knowing like the different scales and whatever, as a drummer usually you don't know any of that shit.
Yeah, man.
Not
yeah,
at all. You know, no. You don't even fucking care. You're like, I don't need any of it. I'll do the rhythm.
Yeah.
So how was that transition to now like start throwing notes together? Because even when you play and you were showing me some things, it's like you can't just randomly just fucking tap a handpan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, it was definitely a learning curve for sure. And I'd like known a little bit about it just from playing in bands. Like I knew like what notes sounded okay. Like, like this key is in this song is in D minor, so don't hit that chord or don't hit that note or whatever. But at the time that was kind of like my deepest, it was more of like a, like what not to do rather
you're
than
hitting
like
a king and you're like,
let's try again. So when I got really into the handpan and saw like the potentials of like, working it into songwriting stuff and playing with different artists, it was like, okay, I should know some theory. Like I should know what notes go together and all that. So
what was that process of learning all that?
Steep. Yeah, it was steep, man. I was like, the first little bit, it was, I'd been playing drums for a while, and then, you started something, and like, it's always nice to start something like brand new, like where you have no understanding of it. But like, you're like 10 years into music and then you start this whole other side of music that
you had
I had no real knowledge of. So it was a steep learning curve, but it was even now, like I don't have a college level understanding of music theory, but I can get by. It was definitely through the handpan stuff, I definitely wanted to learn more about why certain things sounded good together rather than just like, oh, that note and that note and ship it.
Cool.
So
like let's talk about that, like just the like mental awareness behind going into that whole new way, because obviously, like you said, you've already perfected percussion, you're playing all this stuff, and now you've obviously, once you started the handpan, you were hitting walls left and right. So that determination to kind of be like, I'm just gonna keep fucking going and get better at this, versus like, ah, fuck this, I could always go back to drums. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if it was like so much like that, where it was like, because even the mistakes, like the handpan to me was like more so like, it's just sounded to me so cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like just from the beginning to even now, like I'm just, every time I pick up a new one or even the ones that I have in my studio, I'm like, man, like just the sound is so cool. So like even the mistakes and like the mess ups were like, it wasn't like you hit a wrong note on a guitar and it was like, ah, that was, I don't know. I was kind of always interested.
There was never like a frustrating moment.
I mean, frustrating, but not like, screw this, I'm done. It was just frustrating to like, be so new. It's like, it's kind of like I used to practice a lot for like, because I didn't want to have the situation where like I could hear something in my head that I wanted to play and I couldn't like technically do it with my hands yet. So like that was a real big inspiration to me of like, let's practice hard so there's no limitations. So that was really easy. The counterpoint of that to like in music theory was like, well, if I mess up, I'll just start over. Like there was no frustration like there was of like, ah, my hands don't move that way. Like it was just like, I just don't know it yet. You know what I mean? Like it was like an intriguing frustration where I was like, all right, I'm excited to learn, So
because I feel like people pick up new things or new instruments, and I know plenty of friends that I'm gonna learn guitar, and then it's not fucking easy. Yeah, you know what I mean? You start like, your fingers start tensing up, and you're like, you learn a little bit, and then, you know, it's so easy to just be like, fuck this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so, I've hit that wall a few times, like, not with the big picture, more of like, you know, this song isn't working, or like this combination of instruments isn't working, or whatever, but not really, like, which is kind of weird, because I've had that with drums, where I'm like, I don't want to. Like, only a few times when I was, like, really first starting out. Like, I don't want to do this. It's too hard. Or, you know, like, you're like a teenager. Everything.
Right. Everything's, you know, like,
super exaggerated.
But I can play Madden.
But so it was, you know, I never really had that with the handpan stuff. And it's like, maybe that's.
It just caught your attention right
away.
Yeah,
it just caught my attention. It was just kind of like, I was just kind of hooked on it. And, like, not all the days were perfect. But at least it was, like, it was still really, it was a really fun, like, you asked about the learning curve. Like, it was steep, like, to know the notes. But it was really kind of fun to. Like, learn.
And I'm sure with every new one, because you have, like, different variations. Some have, like, 6 notes on top. Some have, like, fucking 15 notes on the top and 4 on the bottom. You know, so, like, every time you got a new one, it was, like, another, like...
Yeah, a whole new...
Oh, man.
Variations and possibilities. And, yeah, it was really exciting. And, again, like, you know, talking about how scarce they were in the beginning, like, you know, my first, from 2009 to 2015... Mm-hmm. 2014, I only had 2 instruments, and one was a central note plus 7, and then the other one was a central note plus 8. A central note plus 9.
For people that can't really picture it, like that are listening on the audio platforms, it's basically a steel spaceship looking thing that fits your hand.
Yeah, so it's an inverted steel drum you play with your hands. It's the easiest way.
Yeah, but if people don't even know what a steel drum is.
All right, strip it back one more layer.
One layer backwards. But yeah, it's a steel, and it has indents across the top of it. And each indent is like a different note.
Yeah, each dent has a different note to it.
And then the top is...
The
central note, and that's like, so that's kind of giving you the basis of the key that one is on.
Essentially. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You were gonna get a little bit more technical.
No. Just you know, it's that's you're right.
You get more technical. I'm just I'm just explaining what I see.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is, man. Yeah.
So going from there, like you said, from about 2009 is when you were like. You got your first handpan drum and you started practicing, but you didn't launch an album until about 2014, which is like about 5 years later.
Yeah, 2014 was the first one.
Yeah, so tell me, why do you think it took you so long to actually like put a project together and actually...
I think some of it is like, you know, like learning anything new. Like there's a lot of, you know, I'm sure you know a lot of artists, like as I do, that you've seen online that like, they put music out and it's just like it's. You could tell it's rushed or it's really early.
Not mixed, like, not mastered. Not,
yeah, it's just like you're, they're not like. I don't know. Like you don't have like you don't know what you want to do musically yet.
Yeah.
And those, for those first like you know 5 years or whatever, it was like I was playing like really melodic stuff and then like annoyingly percussive stuff and then like I kind of found this, you know, niche right down the middle where it was like a little of this, a little of that, and you know, so you really kind of develop your sound. So, I think. I wanted to wait just until I had something that was actually, like, one that I wasn't annoyed to listen to. You know, like, I wanted to, like, put something out that I liked to play. And then also something that was unique. You know, like, I think with the instrument, that's another part of, like, why it's so exciting to me is because the instrument is so new. You know, everything that, you know, me and the other players are doing at that time, like, a lot of it was, like, the first, you know, like, early handpan music with electronics or with a singer or with... You know, I know guys who play with like full bands and like jazz quartets and stuff. Yeah. Like, it was like the first.
Everything anybody was doing with the instrument, it was like the first time somebody did it with
this
instrument.
Even 2014, I wanted to do something that like was actually something that reflected the music that I liked and was technically, you know, now I look back on it and kind of cringe a little bit. But, you know, at the time it was like, okay, like I feel technically this is a good album and... I don't know, man. I guess I was just a little, I just wanted to make sure I had something to say before I threw it out there to the world. You know?
Yeah, because a lot of people are like, all right, they just start putting it out.
Yeah,
like
you said, which start is fine. But
yeah, everybody has their own way, but, you know, I guess eventually kind of building your own type of sound that you wanted to hear. Now, during that 5-year period, were you always in the mindset of like, I'm going to eventually make an album or... Did that come like later on as you keep practicing?
No, man, and I really like full albums. Like, I think singles, like when people just release a bunch of singles, is really cool. But I've always liked, you know, putting a record on from like track one to track 12, and you kind of taking on like a little bit of a journey. You know, it's like it starts crazy and then gets light and then comes back. Like, I always loved like the process of making an album and like, you know, thinking about what song goes first and second and third.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was always from the beginning. Like, I knew that I wanted to do like, you know, proper albums, like not just, you know, one song here or maybe an EP. Like, I've always been attracted to like the full length stuff. So
Speaking of the arranging of tracks and, you know, creating kind of like a movement in between songs, what's that process like for you?
It's a lot more sophisticated now. You know, back then it was like, all right, this is at a faster BPM and the other one's slower, so that goes first, this goes second. But like now, you know, I have a lot more instruments, and you know, my playing technically is a lot more proficient, and like my production is a lot better, you know, from 2014 till now. So now it's kind of, you know, like it's I have a bigger, like, I write songs all the time, so I have a bigger pool to choose from. You know, like the first album and the second album were kind of like, you know, I had 15 songs and I chose the 10 or 12 best.
Yeah.
And it was like, they sounded decent together, but there wasn't really a rhyme or a reason. Mm-hmm. Where now, like, I'll record, like, you know, I think for the last album, I did 30-something songs, 33 songs or something like that, and then chose 10. And the one before, it was like, you know, 20-something and chose 15 or 14.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now, like, you know, these days, it's like, like, I'm more attentive to the songwriting and to, like, how I want the albums to kind of sound. So it just, you know, it's a little more meticulous. You know, it's like I'm super critical of myself, you know, because I just want to make a good album. But it's definitely, it's evolved a lot, man.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was, you should have heard the early demos. You'd be like, I don't even want this guy to listen to my podcast, let alone be on it. You know what I mean? Like, like, it was, some of them were rough, you know? So.
With that being said, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Here's a message from our sponsors, SoCo Leather. Check them out. You can have anything custom made leather. You can contact them, but also check out their new shoes, wallets. They also have a brand new leather barbecue apron for special orders. Check them out. Shout out to SoCo Leather. They're on Instagram and Google. SoCo Leather, don't forget, wallets, shoes, belts, barbecue apron, anything made out of leather, they got it. They might even do kinky stuff for you. All right, with that.
You can't say that and look at me.
And now back with
Come
Dan.
On, man, yeah.
So speaking of kinky, Dan, have you ever been, you've toured internationally in festivals.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever came up to you and be like, play me like one of your hand pans?
No, I wish, man. I wish I had a cool story like that, but I just don't. I'm trying to think, man. Yeah, like the closest to that was I remember I was walking through, like, I was playing this festival in France, and it was like, you know, like the headliner finishes at like 3:30, 4 a.m. Yeah. So it's like all night. So it was like, you know, 4 a.m. and I'm walking back to where I was sleeping, and I tripped over these two people who were like mid, whatever they were doing, under like a sleeping bag or whatever, and I tripped over, like I fell on the ground.
Really?
They were mid action. Oh. They were mid action. I tripped right over them, and I was like, "Oh man, I'm so sorry." And they were like, they were kind of pissed at first, and they were like, "Did you just play?" I was like, yeah, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, you're that
like,
guy.
Come
it was
under
more
the
like,
sleeping
wait a
bag,
minute, no, I just saw it. Yeah, no, yeah. I didn't get the invite. It was just, you know, they were just recognized me from
come join
you
us,
know,
man.
3 hours ago.
Come on, join us in here.
That's
man.
The closest I got to the kinky stuff. So not too much.
The closest is tripping over it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I was right there.
You know, the next step. The next step from there is play me like a handpan. No, but you were talking about right before the break. We were talking about writing music. So obviously, you know, you're not writing music like a music artist. You're not singing. So how are you writing music for the handpan? Is it are you kind of like doing scores type of thing? Or
yeah, so that's a really good question, man. But it's so like all the parts. You know, I don't sing on the albums. Like I'll feature some singers and stuff in a lot of it. But if you listen to it, it still has like. You know, if you hear like a verse, chorus, bridge, repeat.
Yeah, you could hear actually where those would be placed. Yeah,
yeah. So I try to use the handpan like how you would treat a singer in the mix. You know, it's like the chorus, even though it's all instrumental, it's like the voicing on the instrument. Like that is what I want to tell, like, okay, we're going from this part to that part. Or, you know, like chorus to bridge to chorus, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I still treat it like regular song structures where it's not just like free-floating and like, you know, whatever I feel like playing happens. You know, it definitely has a structure, you know, like all that stuff.
What's up, everybody? This is your host, Edison. Thanks for tuning in to the Questionable Behavior Podcast. Please don't forget to leave a like, subscribe to our channel, and also hit that bell on your way out so that you get notified for every new episode. Thanks again for tuning in. We couldn't do any of this without your help and support. So it's kind of like every one of your songs, if an artist was to hear it, and be interested in like, oh, I want to do some of that song. They can, they technically can. In a sense.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's and it's I found it's really easy to do it that way because that's how most every musician operates. You know, it's verse, chorus, and whatever other parts. So it's like if I'm like, well, now if you go from, you know, the 40 seconds into a minute and 10 is a cool part. It's like no. Like that's I have very clear choruses and bridges and verses and whatever. So
and when we were talking about earlier about like just the with the handpan and you wanted to kind of build your sound, I feel like a lot of other artists that I've seen doing the handpan tend to do a lot of like I want to say like a meditation type of feel, you know, that those type of and you kind of take it. You're doing electronic, you're doing dubstep, you're doing hip hop. So, and on top of that, you're mixing your production with it. I saw one video which they're gonna see at the end of this is. You're hitting the keys as you're playing the handpan at the same time. So
So it's been a weird hurdle to get over because like a lot of people when they see the instrument, it kind of immediately goes to like, oh, that's a yoga or meditation or, you know, I saw a guy busking on the street with it and like all that stuff is fine. Like that's, you know, that's a different avenue to go to. But for me, from the beginning, I've always seen like, man, this is a legitimate, like this is a cool instrument that could be used in like, you know, as you said, like I do a lot of stuff with, you know, hip hop and R&B people and, you know, dubstep guys and you know, a lot of different realms and it works. So a hurdle that I've kind of had to try to get over is like to present the instrument in like those settings where it's like, wait a minute, like I'm familiar with like this rhythm, but instead of, you know, a singer, I'm hearing this, like that's cool. You know, so like that's something I try to, I don't know how better to say it except get like a hurdle, you know, where it's like, it's not just for meditation or, you know.
Yeah, you're trying to get people kind of comfortable with all the other sounds with the instrument.
And it's just, again, so like show the potential, you know. And so whether it's me or I hope it's me, but whether it's me or somebody else that, you know, is featured on, you know, like I just did a track with like a pretty good R&B singer and like the electronic guys I work with, like they're pretty established in their worlds, you know what I mean? Like in the R&B world and, you know, the electronic or whatever the world is, you know, to like prove to those people that this is an instrument that could work, I think is really exciting, you know, because like, you know, it could open some doors, I hope, you know?
I mean, you also made a collab with an artist, her name is Mariba. It was pretty big, I would say.
In the R&B world,
and she made it kind of like sounded like an Afrobeat type of thing.
Yeah,
and it was all based on the handpan. Basically, like the whole melody and rhythm was following your hand pen in a sense.
So yeah, the guy that made the beat, he goes by Elite. Mm-hmm. He's like a really talented producer, and he made the beat, and the whole like the melody of that beat was the, you know, kind of based on the hand pen sample that I put out there, like a song of mine. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, that was really cool for me to hear, because like I get a lot of like messages and stuff where it ends up being just like a little bit of the song, or like, you know,
they just put a little plug at the end.
Yeah, like a little flare in the of chorus or something. And, you know, to hear that song from like start to finish have handpan in it was really cool for me. You know, I was like, man, that like it can hang. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it can hold up to like any other kind of sample. So, and kind of like, you know, catch the audience's attention where it's like, you know, maybe people haven't heard that sound before. And liked it. So,
yeah. So, I mean, just in regards to your success with the handpan, you've managed to turn it into a full-time career. You know, there was a moment where you were working in radio, and when you lost your job, you basically, it was like a blessing for you, and you took the handpan, and now, since then, you haven't really looked back. Even during a pandemic, when you had like 70 something shows canceled.
Yeah, it's been
a whirlwind.
You
still managed
to
not go back to the full time.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a whirlwind. You know, it's like as you said, like I lost that job, and I had I put a record out on March 1st, like my fourth record, March 1st of last year, and I was 16 days into a 36 date tour when everything kind of.
Which is going to be in like multiple countries.
The first leg was
Europe, somewhere, multiple places in Europe.
Yeah. So that was like all throughout the year. Like the one that I was on was just the East Coast and back. It was like
because you were in the middle of
the
tour.
It was the first tour.
Yeah,
it was the first tour of a few. So, that sucked.
Like, man, this fucking year is going to be awesome. I can't wait for Japan.
I can't wait for this year. Japan, I've never been and whatever. But yeah, so I'll get back there at some point. So. But. Yeah, certainly 2020 was not the year to be touring.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it was so there was a lot of like I had a lot of momentum leading into that. You know, I had a few big collaborations and show like kind of milestones that I hit the year before. So I was feeling like I could really take a run at it.
Go to the next level for
it. Yeah, I mean, and just sustain myself through it, you know, and it was a good plan. It sounded good in my head.
They're like, hold up real quick. Yeah. Corona.
Yeah, so but, yeah, it was definitely some adapting.
I mean, even so, you did a lot of stuff during quarantine. You were giving out online classes.
Yeah.
You did this big collaboration with different handpan artists globally.
Yeah.
I think you told me there was, in one of them, it was like about 20 different.
Yeah, 20 or 21. I'm forgetting right now.
Yeah.
I think it was me plus 20.
Yeah.
Was the final number.
So tell me, how did you put all that together?
So that in the year, I took on some private students for the first time. Like I'd been getting requests to like, hey, can you teach me? Like, do you give any lessons? And I was always just too busy, because if I'm going to teach somebody, I didn't want to go like a half foot in.
Right.
You know, like whatever. So like I had the time to do it. So, you know, teaching and doing that video series was really fun. It's called the Handpan Chop Shop.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically like I'll make a beat and send it to, you know, the one that you talked about for the 20 people was like the biggest one that was, you know, there's a lot of players, but usually they were like six or seven. So it was like a 3.5-4.5 minute video.
Yeah.
Everybody takes a solo and writes a melody to it. It was fun. But it was just to kind of highlight like the different styles of playing within the world and do something cool with my friends. You know, like a lot of the people in those videos are like, you know, really good friends of mine, like through music. So it was a fun project, man. It definitely kept me busy. It was a lot of editing and
tell me
music making.
Tell me about that in general. Your progression through the handpan. We were just talking about, you know, the instrument you got from Russia, the one from Italy, and before you even got one, you were practicing on a cymbal.
Yeah.
So tell me how the hell that was working out for you. Before you got your first handpan.
Yeah, so thankfully, man, I felt pretty lucky because I already had a drumming background.
Yeah.
So, like, I kind of understood, like, movements, you know, like how you're positioned on an instrument or whatever. So
if you press on one side, you get a different,
Yeah, man, so when I saw people playing, I realized, like, you know, the motions that they were using were very different than I was used to from playing drums. So I was like, man, I have 9 months, 10 months until this instrument comes to me, my first one. Let me just get something that's the general shape of the instrument, and I'll start practicing the motions, how they look on YouTube, like just to get my hands moving in a different way. And yes, I had stickers on a cymbal and, you know, try to practice that way.
Just putting different stickers on it.
Yeah. So just the scent, because on this, every cymbal has a bell. Yeah. So I thought of that as a center note and then just did stickers. Yeah. 8 stickers up.
And then you were just fucking trying.
Yeah, man. I was desperate.
Oh, man. That's the dedication right there. Yeah. So wait, so when you put in your first order, it was going to take 9-10 months to get it?
Yeah. I think all in all, it took about 9 months.
Holy
10
shit.
Months. Yeah, man. And now, too, it's not uncommon because they're all handmade. And a lot of the people, like, there's a few companies that are, you know, they have real heavy machinery and, you know, a lot of people working under the same company. But a lot of the companies are, you know, 2 or 3 people, maybe even 1 person building. And they all have backlogs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you just order one, like, hey, when can this come? It's like, well, 4 months, 6 months from now is pretty standard.
Wow.
So it takes, it takes a bit, man.
Yeah. So tell me about the collaborations you did with some companies that they're little, essentially making one based on what you want.
So yeah, like you're kind of working in, like, the instruments themselves have like certain parameters they have to stay in, like certain notes next to each other just don't work.
Okay.
But if I have,
because I guess of just how it's built.
Yeah, like harmonics getting in the way of each other. It's just,
some,
you know,
engineering,
it's a lot of, like,
shit.
Yeah, engineering shit that I don't understand.
What's up, everybody? This is your host, Edison. Thanks for tuning in to the Questionable Behavior Podcast. Please don't forget to leave a like, subscribe to our channel, and also hit that bell on your way out so that you get notified for every new episode. Thanks again for tuning in. We couldn't do any of this without your help and support.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
I was feeling very spiritual with it.
I try not to skimp on merch, you know. Yeah. Like, all my, I try to have it all. High quality shit.
I gotta fucking make more merch.
That's it.
I gave out all my shirts. By the way, real quick, before we get back to Dan, we sent out a bunch of shirts to some fans that I know have been following for a long time. So I just want to say thank you to you guys. I specifically told a couple of them, don't post shit on Instagram because this is not for the fucking hype or nothing like that. It's just simply thank you because we've definitely been at moments where, you know, it wasn't doing as great as it's doing now. So, you know, if it wasn't for some of you guys listening and just giving, like, some supportive messages at key moments throughout this process, I don't even know if I'd still be doing this right now. So, thank you. Enjoy the shirts. And when I make more, I'm going to send more. All right.
Nice.
So, Dan, before we close out the show, your newest album, Real Life.
Real Life, yep.
All right. Tell me a little bit about it.
So, yeah, it came out March 1st last year. Perfect timing.
Actually, a little bit perfect because then people are home listening.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, man, I was working on the tracks for like a year and a half or two years, and I think I recorded like 33 or 35 songs and picked the, you know, 10 best that I thought really fit together. And I wanted like a really cohesive record, you know, from start to finish. And I tried to showcase, like, you know, handpan with trap elements and handpan with, you know, a lot of different, you know, full band arrangements and songs and, yeah, man. So it was a little here, a little there. I think there's
a couple different genres mixed together in it as well, right?
Yeah. And some of it's like real, structured and like beat intensive. Mm-hmm. And then the others are kind of a little
more
on
melodic,
the spacier side, a little, little vibey. So,
actually, I have a request. Some of the songs that didn't make the album.
Yeah.
Can we have a few to play in the background of this episode? Like, very low, not interrupting.
So a lot of them aren't, like, they're not finished. Like, there's, like, pieces for a bunch of them.
Okay.
You know, so I could...
He said no.
No, I could piece something. I could piece something together.
All right, well, you don't have to, but I'm just saying, we're playing a little bit of music in the background anyway.
That's
so
it,
I was like, oh, might as well play some
You just play the real album.
I could, but I don't, you know.
Unless you get flagged.
Yeah, it'll get flagged, and I'll get fucking blocked and then sued by Dan.
Right.
So, all right. Yeah. But with that being said, Dan, tell everybody where they can check out your music, Instagram, all of that, and any shout-outs that you need to give, you know, so whoever you got to make happy at home.
That's it, man. Yeah, all the music is everywhere, Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, all those places. Instagram, I'm probably the most responsive with. It's just at Dan Mulqueen. And yeah, I'm on all socials.
M-U-L Queen.
That's it. Yeah, man.
Social media, and then YouTube. Obviously, you have all your YouTube, videos. You did a home concert.
Yeah, there's a lot of full length, 30-45 minute shows up there. From a lot of them over the pandemic, right. Live from home style stuff.
Nice.
So,
nice. Something similar you'd see in when you perform at So Far. So it'd be something similar
very much go. So. Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, make sure to check out Dan. Make sure to subscribe to us. I'll learn how to say that one day. And check us out on Instagram, @_QBBC. Go to our website for any video, audio, and news. It's QBmediagroup.com. Thank you so much, and subscribe.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you.